Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting faith with life.
Well, we love that little opening line to the program, but today I think it's going to be particularly appropriate. We expect something good over the lunch hour because we have one of the world's top chefs with us today, Ted.
So, you're not eating now, you probably will be soon.
I just sent a note to a friend of mine who said, what are you going to talk to him about? What do you know about that? So,
I know how to eat, right?
She gives me a bad time about, my Norwegian cream sauce and lack of spices on everything. So, Chef Rick Tremonto is going to really enlighten us, and we're glad to welcome him back. Before we introduce him, I should just mention that if you go to the show page, the Connecting Faith show page, at myfaithradio.com, you'll see there's a opportunity there to sign up for a free prayer guide for Ramadan. There's a worldwide prayer movement that has been going on for the last two, three decades. People all over the globe have been praying for Muslims to come to Christ, and they focus that particularly during the month of Ramadan, which comes up here next Wednesday night, the 17th at sundown it starts. Mm-hmm. So it's a 30-day time of spiritual awareness for devout Muslims, and we have an opportunity to just say, let's pray that they'll come to discover who Jesus really is.
Should mention to find that on our website, myfaithradio.com. It's under our show page here for Connecting Faith specifically. Yeah. So under programs, click on Connecting Faith.
Yeah. I hope you'll do that, and thank you for making it a commitment to pray over the next month. Let's talk food and the faith and the connection between the two, because our guest knows all about it. For 11 years, Rick Tremonto was executive chef and founding partner at Chicago's world-renowned four-star fine dining restaurant, True, in a partnership with the restaurateur Rich Melman, who was the chairman of Lettuce Entertain You Enterprises, which I just I love that, and pastry chef Gail Gann. He's also a culinary director of Tremonto Cuisine Incorporated, which developed a Tremonto Steak and Seafood. And they've, back in, I think, about 2010, he partnered with a native Louisiana chef there and formed a new restaurant company called Home on the Range. And they opened their first project called Restaurant Revolution in New Orleans. And now there's another one that I think is opened up in Mississippi. And was it Mississippi, Rick, that we...
Jackson, Mississippi, Seafood Revolution.
Yes, and then the Chicago, and so, and Rick has also, we should mention, has authored 8 cookbooks. He has been on, some of those the top TV programs, and in a number of the major magazines. In fact, what did I see? You were in one of these series. You were a contestant in season 2 of Top Chef Masters. You've also been a judge on the reality show Top Chef. So. You know a lot about what you talk about.
Yeah, but the beauty of it all is you said it at the very beginning. As long as you know how to eat, you're good to go.
Okay.
You don't have to know a lot to enjoy food. You just need to know how to eat, and I think it's great that you know what you like and you know what you don't like, and everybody has that opinion of that palate, and I think that's been the beauty of my journey. Starting in 1977 at Wendy's Old Fashioned Hamburgers when I was a kid, my options were limited. My dad went to prison when I was a kid. I was an only child in an Italian family. My mom was Abruzzi. My dad was Napolitan, and, very working class, blue collar folks in upstate New York and Rochester, New York. So, it was a great time in lots of ways, and it was a horrible time in lots of ways. And, God really pushed me through this journey to wrap my arms around food, because I didn't have any real, academic choices, leaving high school, not having the ability to go to culinary or go to college. So I jumped right in. I jumped right in because I needed a J-O-B, what I mean?
Yeah. By the way, we've got Rick's story, and we'll kind of unpack it as we go along. It's called Scars of a Chef. It's a great book. We've got 3 copies to give away. If you'd like to sign up, we'll do a drawing at the end of the hour, and you'll enjoy the conversation, the reading, just a little the history of his journey to faith as well. It's 877-933-2484 is our number, 877-93-FAITH. And if you have, you know, food and food prep questions, you're welcome to join in to hear from a top chef. Rick, I'm interested, too. Is the fast food route maybe not a bad way to go? I mean, you, like you said, you were a high school dropout, didn't really have the education. Is that still a valuable entry-level job? There's been lots of conversation about, you know, minimum wage and all those things. But say a word about that path to kind of maybe get on your feet.
Yeah, I think just starting wherever you can is the best way. I mean, you know, for me to say, you know, would I have chosen to start it at a fast food level? No, I would have loved to have started as a dishwasher in a more high level or a prep cook in a more high level restaurant, because that was the direction that I was going. And like I said, at the time, there wasn't a lot of thought process put into it. I wasn't even studied or convinced that, oh, I'm going to be a chef. And, you know, I mean, so many people, I mean, I knew by the time I was 18 or 19, but from 16 to, you know, 19, let's say, you know, it was really just survival. It was really just where I could go to work. And not that there was anything wrong with working at a gas station or, you know, working construction or part-time in a music store or whatever the case may be. I was still under 18, and, you know, you couldn't really work in places that served alcohol. I mean, you know, you had to work in an environment that was fast food or family restaurants that really didn't have liquor license. So that drove some of it too. Yeah. But I think to start wherever you can start, you start. If you have the ability to start at a higher level, you know, the main thing is just to start cooking, whether you're cooking burgers or steaks or, you know, fine dining. You know, the main thing is to start the journey.
Let's talk about the life of a chef, because, I mean, the old saying, if you can't stand the heat, get out of the kitchen. But it does seem like chefs, you know, at least the ones that we see on TV, seem like they're, you know, maybe a little hot under the collar. So I mean, is that really true? I mean, does the hot temper and cooking go hand in hand?
You know, I hate to stereotype it, because it's like saying every musician is, you know, into drugs, which, you know, isn't true. So I think it's really it's like everything else. I mean, there's hot-headed lawyers, there's hot-headed accountants, and there's hot-headed chefs. So I think that it's really it's a personality thing, but certainly it's a very high pressure job, and it certainly is very high in access and excess. Let's put it that way. I think that's a more accurate stereotype of being in kitchens around the world or in big major metropolitan cities, New York, Chicago, London, New Orleans. I mean, there's lots of access and excess for young kids to get into trouble, and I think that's really the advice that I give kids that come through my kitchens every day, is they need to stay focused on the task at hand. And if you're there just for a job, then you kind of understand where they're coming from. If they're there for a career path, then, you know, I think you can buckle down on them a little bit harder and be much harder on them while you're trying to, you know, help the other ones or speak the gospel into the other ones' lives to help them, you know. We call it the vampire life. You know, they sleep till noon, they get up, they're at work at 2, they work till 2, and then they're out till 5, you know. So you try to help them break that cycle and focus on, you know, being a chef.
It does seem like, I mean, the hours are pretty, I mean, amazing. And then, I mean, as you kind of recount in your story, and I'm sure it's probably still true today, I mean, there's long hours. I mean, it's 6 to 6 if you're doing a day shift or all night.
Absolutely brutal. You know, you work on all the holidays. You work when everybody else is off. I mean, if you think about it, I mean, we're in the hospitality business, right? So, you know, you need to be in the hospitality business to be hospitable. So I think it's really important that people understand that going into the career, which is very, you know, people ask me all the time, man, you know, what's your advice? And I said, well, just know that the hours are brutal and you really need to wear comfortable shoes because you're going to be standing for 14 hours a day, you know. So I think those things people sometimes miss because they get caught up in the glamour. They get caught up in the television personalities and, and which is great. I mean, there's lots of things to be said about television chefs, and they certainly opened the door for us in many ways and opportunities that we would have never had if they didn't, to become from chef to celebrity or to have a stage or a voice that you can share your art. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, if you're going into fine dining, if you're going into, you know, just casual food or Italian food or, you know, Japanese food, whatever it is, it certainly is an art form. So it gives you a stage to present your art at the end of the day.
We're going to talk more about the artistry of Top Chef Rick Tremonto. Rick has written a wonderful story about his life and experience called Scars of a Chef, the searing story of a top chef marked forever by the grit and grace of life in the kitchen. And we got some copies of it to give away. You'd enjoy reading it, I know. It's 877-933-2484. 877-93-FAITH is the phone number. And you can sign up for a drawing for the books. And if you have a question, too, we're going to talk about, you know, food preparation. Maybe just, you know, the how do we be creative in preparation? What does that look like? You know, if you're just kind of trying to feed the kids each and every day around the house. And we'll get to maybe some tips for good summer cooking as well. All that coming up here in the next minute or two. So stay tuned as we talk more with Rick Tremonto just ahead. Right up there at the top, isn't it? And thank God for the ability to enjoy food, and we're just blessed to have gifted men and women who can do wonderful things with the gifts that God gives us, provides for us. One of those is Top Chef Rick Tremonto. Rick is returning here on Connecting Faith. We've talked with him in the past about his book, his life story, Scars of a Chef. And I've recommended to you. I've got some copies of the book to give away. And if you have some questions, too, you want to talk, you know, food preparation and all those things, you can call us at 877-933-2484. I am interested, Rick, I guess, because you have been a judge in one of those Top Chef programs. You know, what does it say about us that, you know, there's so much popularity in food shows? You've written, produced 8 cookbooks, best-selling cookbooks. I mean, there's just, we are just kind of fascinated by everything food, aren't we?
Well, we are, and I think that there's lots of reasons for that. I think, you know, I think everybody loves competition. I mean, I think there's great, you know, if you look at sports fans and you look at those kind of things, I mean, people love competition. They also love to watch folks do what they can't do. I was watching the Stanley Cup last night. You know, my heart was breaking. You know, you just are amazed at how, you know, hockey players can skate or basketball players can shoot. So, you know, you get fixated on, you know, some of the things, even though I could go in my, you know, driveway and shoot baskets, I'm not shooting like that. And you can go in your kitchen and cook, but you probably can't cook like I can. So I think there's like a backstory, you know, it's like a backstage pass to see what we do and how we do it and the techniques and the flavor profiles and all of that. I think it's very interesting to people, and it's a means of celebration. I mean, let's face it, we all love to sit around the table on Sunday with family or Thanksgiving or Christmas and, you know, get ideas or, you know, change it up a little bit or to improve our turkey or to improve our ham, whatever we're making. So I think there's also some great education that people are, you know, grabbed onto, say, wow, I can do that, or I can improve how I make salsa or whatever the case may be.
Is there a sense of kind of, you know, raw talent? You have to be obviously, you know, good with your hands so you don't, I suppose, cut your fingers off. But, I mean, are there some, you know, when you're looking at maybe a crop of new chefs in training, can you kind of tell right away the ones that are that really have it? Or is it more about art or is it about kind of science?
I think it's both. I think it's if you put it beautifully. You know, Rich Melman used to tell us that what we do is certainly a combination of art and science. And the beauty is, you know, if you have the right spirit, if you have the right attitude, you know, I can teach you anything, but you will hit a wall. It's just like, you know, everybody would love to be Michael Jordan, but they can't, you know. But but you know, you certainly can cultivate your skill set over the years. I'm 37 years into the field. I'm 52, so you know, it's been my whole life trying to master my craft, and I still feel like I'm just about halfway there. You know, I have a long way to go. So it's just like any craft, any art, any sport, any musician. It's practice, practice, practice. And if you're diligent at it and you're passionate about it, you know, that takes you 75% of the way. I can learn any new technique or any new style that's coming out if I'm dedicated to doing that, you know.
I was, you know, interested in, just as I kind of read the book again, thinking about all the time that you spend in preparation. I mean, we, you know, if we're coming to a restaurant, nice restaurant, I mean, we see the final presentation, and it's just, it's wonderful, and it, you know, looks great, tastes great, and all those things. But, you know, there's probably hours and maybe days or weeks even just kind of working toward that. Just give us a little sense of kind of what preparation is like for, you know, maybe a high-end restaurant. And then if you've got some tips on how we could, you know, the preparation to make life a little easier at the back end.
Right. Well, the one thing I always point out, and I always have these conversations with people, I said, you know, great art usually will hang on the wall for, you know, up to hundreds and thousands of years. Same thing with music. It goes on and on. With cuisine, you're only as good as your last dish, because it gets eaten and it's gone. So, you know, but what you're creating is you're creating the memory and the experience. I can't begin to tell you over the years how many people have stopped me and come up to me and said, man, I had my, you know, 50th wedding anniversary at your restaurant, or we celebrated me passing the bar exam at your restaurant, and they remember everything they eat, and they start reciting these dishes from 10 years ago because it was a moment in time that they remember. So for me, I'm creating memories. I'm creating things that you know, that most people don't get the opportunity to do. So I love that about my profession. Even though you work from 7 o'clock in the morning and until midnight, and within, you know, 2 hours, your art is gone, or an hour, your art is gone by somebody consuming it. But you know that they, you know, if it was well done, they will recall that for years and years to come. So that's the first thing I definitely want to mention. And then the other thing is, yeah, I mean, our days start super early. I mean, you know, there's certain levels of cuisine where, you know, again, if you're doing great farm to table stuff and you're working within the seasons and you're going to, like, our Green City Market just opened in Chicago. So, you know, going down to the market, in the morning and, you know, really seeing what's peaking and buying that and going back to your kitchen and creating it. You know, my advice to people is always stay flexible. If you're like, man, I'm going to go to the market and I'm going to make strawberry shortcake today, and you get to the market and the strawberries just aren't that good, but the blueberries are over the top, you're making blueberry shortcake today. I mean, at the end of the day, you got to roll with it. You know, you got to be able to start at the raw ingredients. It's all about that. You don't have to do a lot to a perfect peach, but bite into it and let the juice run down your arm, right? I mean, at the end of the day, you know, cherry season and plum season and all the tomato season and all the stuff that we're going into right now, be inspired by that. You know, yes, you may have a roadmap or a plan for dinner tonight, but be flexible enough to go in and go, you know what? It's just not quite there yet, but this is, whatever this is. So be flexible, first and foremost. Secondly, I always like to prep a bunch of stuff ahead because I like to spend time with my family, and I, you know, I don't get to, or my guests. And, you know, they always say great parties always end up in the kitchen. Well, the reason why is because the chef or the host is always in the kitchen cooking. So you bring everybody into the kitchen, into the environment while you're doing it, and let them participate either in finishing touches or in garnishing or plating or whatever it may be. But I'm a guy that loves to prep ahead. I go to the store on a Thursday, I prep it up on a Friday for a Saturday dinner kind of thing, you know, because I want that Saturday to come. I want it to be, you know, not so stressful. I want my table to be set because I want to spend time with my guests, because it's about the kumbaya at the end of the day, right?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Is it okay with, I mean, not everybody's at the same sort of capability level, but sort of bring them in the kid, give them, and I was thinking maybe your kids too. Your kids are older as mine are, but so should we find ways for them to participate in the process in some way?
Absolutely, especially if they want to. Like, you know, my youngest son was at TRU when he was six, you know, learning how to break down lobsters and learning how to do simple things, basic little knife skills with a little paring knife and peeling things and with a potato peeler. So, you know, if they seem interested, you know, pull up a milk crate or pull up a chair and let them sit. When I was growing up, I mean, I had both of my grandmothers live with us at one time or another, so I was the only child in the group. So, you know, it was always like, you know, Ricky, come help me make raviolis, or Ricky, take out the garbage, or Ricky, you know, do the dishes, or whatever it may be. But it was still this, you know, this unit of my mom and my grandmothers in the kitchen and me kind of floating in doing different tasks. But once I found one of my sons kind of grabbing onto it and saying, man, this is really cool. What else can I do? What else can you show me? The interesting thing is my oldest son right now, who really didn't have any interest in food, now he's graduated college, he's got his own apartment, he's got his own job, he's got his girlfriend. Now he calls me all the time, goes, man, I'm making this. How do I make it? Like, now he wants to cook. And, you know, now he comes over on the weekends and he's like, you know, let's make pulled pork. Show me how to make pulled pork sandwiches, you know, and show me how to grill stuff. Because, you know, now it's a skill set that they want to have, and they're very interested at that point. You know, it's great.
Well, it's also, I mean, it is really one of the ways that we can express our creativity, our God-given gifts, right?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, you get to make your roast chicken the way you want to make your roast chicken. You know, you get to make your mashed potatoes with cream, without cream, with butter, with without butter. It doesn't, you know, you get to create what your flavor palette wants to and share it with others. And you may not always like what they have to say, but it's coming from your heart. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Rick Tramonto is a top chef. He is executive chef and a founding partner at Chicago's world-renowned 4-star fine dining restaurant, TRU. And he and his team have partnered to establish a couple other restaurants. So he spent some time in New Orleans, the restaurant revolution there. They've just launched a new one in Mississippi and back in Chicago. He's also written 8 titles, including his memoir, Scars of a Chef, and also cookbooks, best-selling cookbooks. And we've got some copies of Scars of a Chef that we'll give away here at the end of the hour. If you'd like to sign up for the drawing there. And in fact, there are some recipes at the end of each chapter, so there's a lot to it. And you'll get his great story and his faith journey as well is included in there. And
if you have to go to break, or can I tell one more story before I forget?
What's that? We have a break coming up, and so we'll tell stories. We'll talk more with Rick Tramonto here, just the other side of the break.
Katrina story.
Your Katrina story. We'll do it. Yeah. I thought we should also talk about bacon or something too, just because. Anyway, if you'd like to join us for the conversation, talking food and faith today with Rick Tramonto, 877-933-2484, 877-933-2484. It's time for dinner. Yeah, we're finding something good here over the lunch hour today on Connecting Faith. Welcoming back Chef Rick Tramonto, who is a top chef. He's a Rochester, New York native, and his accomplished author. He's written a number of cookbooks. He's highly regarded, award-winning, and respected. Been done lots of radio and TV, and has told his story well in the book Scars of a Chef. Came out a few years ago. We do have some copies of that available, and we're going to pick up more Rick stories as we go along. I did. It was kind of joking here just before the break, talking about bacon, though. But is that the new ingredient that everyone has to have in every possible food these days, Rick?
Well, I think it's the old ingredient that has resurged itself because people are discovering, you know, how delicious it is and many ways to use it as either a main ingredient or a flavor accent or a flavor profile within, you know, macaroni and cheese or whatever they may be making to layer on top of salads and stuff. But I think it's an old ingredient that has come back, and I've really learned to appreciate it. you know, after the last 4 years of spending time in Louisiana and Mississippi, because, you know, it's, there's so many great, you know, organic pig farms down there, and they do all their own curing and making of bacon and sugar, you know, sugar cured ham and smoking. And I mean, it's really a lost art in many ways. And it's just, they've really opened my eyes being down in the South on just some of the incredible farms that have produced incredible amounts of, you know, salumis and hams and smoking and pigs and bacon. And it's wonderful. You know, it really is wonderful.
Well, you were talking about Louisiana. You mentioned before the break, I want to talk about Katrina. I mean, you've been involved in a number of circumstance situations, from, you know, going in the war zone to, but tell us a little bit about your story there.
Yeah, had the chance to go cook for the troops a couple of years ago in Afghanistan with a group of chefs, which was pretty amazing. But my really good friend, Chef John Foles, who we've known each other for many, many years, I was remember having breakfast with my wife, having coffee and watching Katrina unfold on my television in Chicago. And my wife, Eileen, said, you know, you really need to call John and see how he's doing. So, you know, I tried calling him. I couldn't reach him. Finally, 3-4 hours later, he picked up the phone and I said, hey, man, how you doing? What's going on down there? And he said, oh, it's pretty bad. And I said, well, what can I do to help you? And he said, well, can you come down here? And I said, what do you mean? And he said, you think you could come down here for a couple of weeks? And, you know, we're going to set up mobile kitchens and we're going to cook for the rescue workers. And I said, I'm there. And the next day I flew to New Orleans and, you know, walked through this triage center of an airport and got picked up and was driven down to St. Bernard's Parish, where we set up these feeding kitchens. And there was about 12 chefs, and we had some incredible, you know, global sponsors that just got food to us from, you know, Cisco to Kraft to Starbucks. I mean, they all really reached in and got us what we needed. And we, you know, we cooked all day and all night for rescue workers that were coming back from the storm, and, you know, just praying with them and feeding them. And I did that for 3 weeks. And when I got back on the plane, I just kind of said, when John dropped me off at the airport, I said, you know, life will never be the same. You know, I've never been in war. I've never been in a foxhole. I said, but this is probably the closest thing I've ever gotten to it. And sure enough, you know, 4 years later, God made our paths cross again, and we had this wonderful opportunity to help rebuild the city of New Orleans. And the Royal Sonesta Hotel is where Restaurant Revolution is in the French Quarter. It was one of the first new restaurants to open after the storm. And it's been magic. You know, it's been really incredible helping the city, you know, get back on its feet. And it's bigger and better and more beautiful than ever. And then a year ago, we had the chance to do a seafood version of this in Jackson, Mississippi, Ridgeland, actually, right outside of Jackson, Ridgeland, Mississippi, called Seafood Revolution. So it's been incredible. It's been a great journey. And God has just, you know, really lined up. When I go back and I continue to give God thanks and continue to give God praise of all the things that he's lined up in my life, you know, I could never do it, which is the whole point, giving credit to God. Because when you look at the journey, it's like, man, I didn't have the skill set to do that, or I didn't have the connections to do that, or, you know, I didn't know this or that. And, you know, God is really amazing on how he puts things together and blesses you.
As you talked about, you know, it's something about a meal. They're making memories, but you've had the opportunity to make a few memories just doing the work behind the scenes as well.
Yeah, and I'm good with that. I mean, I love that, because at the end of the day, you know, when you're cooking for 5,000 troops in the desert of Afghanistan, the last thing that they really are thinking about is, you know, Food Network or food television or celebrity chefs. I mean, they're you know, they're looking for 3 or 4 hours of rest and comfort and a meal that they can just kind of, you know, rest on and bring their own memories back from. And I remember the troops that we had cooked for primarily were from Texas, Louisiana, Alabama, Mississippi. So we did like a big Louisiana crawfish boil, and we did a Texas barbecue, and we brought it all to them, you know, for one day. They got a chance to take a breath. And it was incredible. And I, you know, that's one of the great memories for me in my career. You know, people talk about, oh, you've been on Oprah, you've done this, you've done that. But, you know, the ones that really stick out are cooking for the troops in the desert or going to Afghanistan or going to Haiti or whatever it may be to do those kind of outreach.
Chef Rick Tramonto, one of the top chefs in the country, in the world, joining us today. His story is told in the book Scars of a Chef. He's also written some 7 or 8 cookbooks, and we'll talk a little about those as well. We do want to get to a couple of questions, listener questions. Jeff was listening in Duluth, had called in, and says he has a question about Genesis 129 diet. He had a friend who got cured of Lyme disease by sticking to that diet, and wondering if you have thoughts on biblical recipes or biblical food.
You know, I don't really have specific thoughts, but I do know this, that the food that I have studied from Old Testament, New Testament, certainly is, like, you know, very clear that it was this Mediterranean diet, that it was this lots of fish and lots of fruits and vegetables, and certainly in their seasons and in their peaks of flavors, I think that the word refers to it as. So I think that's just, you know, a revelation in itself when you really look at what people ate then, not so much specific dishes, but certainly a style or a sense of cuisine, the freshness, the non-processed, the coming right out of, you know, oceans and lakes and all of that. You know, that speaks volumes to me, you know.
Yeah, there's been a real interest, growing interest over the past few years in vegan diets, right? Or just maybe organic, different things. I mean, what are you seeing as some trends maybe going on in the whole world of food preparation?
You know, the biggest trend for me that is the oldest trend, but it just keeps really reinventing themselves, is just eat well. I mean, you know, and what I mean by eat well, I mean, eat real, eat fresh, you know, go buy, know where your stuff is coming from, buy it at its best, and cook it, you know, within a reasonable amount of time, you know, the first couple days that you have it. And, you know, just start with some basic foundation. You know, sometimes, you know, I'll speak and do keynotes for culinary schools and lots of, I do a lot of consulting and, you know, a lot of that kind of work. And, you know, everybody thinks it's this big mystery, trends and this and that. And it's like, you know, if you just take a step back and just get back to real food and cooking at home and, like I said, finding seasonal products and finding out where it's coming from and treating it with respect and eating it in a moderational fashion, even bacon for that matter, you know, I mean, God set it up. So it's all moderation. It's all real, fresh, seasonal, you know, organic stuff. You just stick to those principles and you know, you've beaten half the battle at that point.
Do you kind of make an effort to eat in season, to cook in season? Is that important?
I do, because if you eat a tomato in January and you eat one in August, you'll know, you know, there's no question about what you're eating at that point. So I am very much sensitive to that. Even going to the great grocery stores that we have now and the availability is that, yes, they're flying in beautiful product from Venezuela or Mexico or California or things like that are off season for Midwesterners. And, you know, I do take a look at that and I do respect that. But it's still about, you know, popping that blackberry in your mouth and see if it tastes like a blackberry.
Yeah. Well, Debbie had a question from Maple Grove, and she wanted to know, she said, what's the best cheese she could have as a diabetic? She's also watching her carb intake. Any opinions on that?
You know, I don't. I would say I wouldn't. I really would not do cheese. I don't have that answer for you. I mean, I'll tell you what I do have an answer for in that, though, is that a lot of times I'll use tofu in that scenario. I mean, and it's really cool because I'll do lots of little in supplements. Like if I'm doing a pasta that requires mozzarella cheese or fontina cheese or something that has some of that, I find myself, and there's dietary restrictions, I find myself going to a really great tofu that's creamy and crumble it up over a pasta dish, and it just kind of melts right into it. And, you know, I find that being very helpful.
Do you have sort of favorite substitutes that you go to often? That's sort of an open question, but
Yeah, I would just say, you know, it really depends on the circumstance. You know, I cook very clean. I eat very clean. And what I mean by that is, again, I go back to, I try to find a great piece of meat, a great piece of fish, a great vegetable. And I try to do as little to it as possible sometimes, you know, especially when I'm cooking at home and for family. Now, again, in the restaurant, based on if I'm cooking in my Italian restaurant or my steakhouse or my New Orleans restaurant or a fine dining restaurant, there certainly is more acrobats and more tricks up the sleeve to, you know, present an asparagus five different ways versus just a perfectly, you know, blanched piece of asparagus or shaved piece of asparagus in a salad. I just cooked at the Literary Festival in Chicago, the Lit Fest in Chicago, and I did a penne pasta with peas. And, you know, I was literally walking in, shucking the peas for my demo, and, you know, made a joke like, you know, it's June in Chicago and it's freezing, you know, poor peas don't know what to do, you know. But, you know, yes, I think it's just, it was very simple. People were surprised. Their biggest question was, man, this dish is so simple. It's, you know, it's great olive oil. It's great, you know, penne pasta. It was a little bit of crisped up pancetta or Italian bacon. It was fresh peas and asparagus and a little bit of Reggiano Parmigiano. And, you know, it was very light and seasonal and spring, early summer-esque. But there was five ingredients, you know, but they were five gorgeous ingredients really put together cleanly with a little chicken stock. So, I mean, I eat and cook really clean, especially at home, because it's just better for me, you know.
So are your cookbooks, I mean, I don't know if we've talked about all of them, but do they represent that, or has that been sort of a process you've come to over the years? You're getting simpler.
No, they certainly represent that. I mean, my Steak with Friends book is cooking, you know, steak with friends. And I wrote a whole book about, you know, again, picking the right steaks and cooking the right steaks and marinating them and what goes with steaks. What's a friend of steak? Well, baked potatoes, a friend of steak, right? So, you know, we kind of did some puns and some fun, but we made it extremely, you know, using the garden at home. And, you know, I love to plant a garden. I have a great garden in my yard and using all of that. My Osteria book is all about, you know, heritage Italian growing up, and my grandmother's recipes and my mom's recipes, my Amuse-Bouche book. Now that gets a little more technical, a little more technique, but still, you know, very, you know, beautifully fresh ingredients, you know, grilled figs with mascarpone cheese is just a one biter. Amuse-Bouche is to amuse the palate. You know, it's a one bite. I did a whole book on my true restaurant, which was extremely complicated and more for, you know, people that are in training to be chefs. So there's variations of my cooking based on where I was at the time in my life. So it's kind of a record of my cuisine, you know, over the last 30 years.
My kids would often ask my wife after a meal, said, "Mom, is this a real recipe?" You know, she kind of made do with what she had. Do you find yourself doing that too? Are you a real stickler for keeping the recipe exact?
No, not at all. Just the complete opposite. You know, I love the whole, you know, the thing that I love about Iron Chef or some of those shows is that, you know, you are working out of a refrigerator spontaneously. You have to open up that refrigerator or that pantry and say, okay, what's in here? Chicken and peppers and, you know, kale or, you know, spices in the spice rack, garlic, onions, you know, you're grabbing things and you're tweaking them on the spot. You know, it's live time, it's 60 minutes, you know, here's a bunch of stuff to make something up with. And, you know, I love that. And I always joke, if you cook a recipe three times and you get it right, it's your recipe. You're allowed to do whatever you want to it. Because you've learned the foundation of the recipe, right? It's like music. You learn the foundation of the song, you know, you replicate a song, and after you really know that song backwards and forwards, you start adding a little solo or drifting off here or there, and I think it gives you creative rights at that point once you really understand it. But, hey, if you don't have broccoli or you don't like broccoli and you want to substitute fennel, go right ahead. I think it's great.
We're going to talk more in a minute with Chef Rick Tremonto. His life story is summed up in the great book called Scars of a Chef. We've got some copies to give away. We'll do drawing for it here. Welcome your questions as well. The number is 877-933-2484, 877-93-FAITH. Rick Tremonto, the award-winning chef and restaurateur. He's got several restaurants that he and his team have put together, and he's got some great cookbooks as well, and got a good faith story and perspective on life and food and faith. We're talking about it today on Connecting Faith. More in a moment. Summer food and faith together with Rick Tremonto today. He's a top chef and has several restaurants that he and his team have put together, and he's been highly awarded and recognized, and written like 8 cookbooks, and the story of his life and faith journey and experiences in the book Scars of a Chef, and we've got some copies to give away. We'll do a drawing here at the end. And Rick, I'm sure that you probably had a few scars on the way up. Keeping your knives sharp was probably important for work, but a little tough on the fingers when you got too careless, right?
Absolutely. also tough on the soul sometimes when you've fallen and had to get back up. I mean, in the early years, certainly had struggled with drug and alcohol, and certainly those were scars just as much as taking a chunk out of your finger some days. So but yes, there's many scars that go with the industry, scars and burns, and it's just about learning your craft, learning your tools, learning how to move and function within a kitchen environment. And it takes time, and that's why you have to start off at the bottom and work your way up and really develop your skill sets and your techniques and your etiquette in the kitchen, and or disciplines, we call them, the disciplines of knife work, the disciplines, which is repetitive over and over and over, dicing over and over, julienne, over and over to really hone your skills. And I hate to keep going back to it, but it's just like a musician. It's really honing your skills on an instrument just as you would on a knife.
Well, and there's obviously faith illustration there as well, right? I mean, the disciplines of the Christian life are going to help us actually be productive and effective there as well.
100%. And I remember my family, my kids, and my wife going into, and my pastor, I go to Life Changers Church in Hoffman Estates, Pastor Gregory Dickow. I've been with him, and under his teaching for, 14 years. And, really bringing my family together, praying and seeking God's wisdom and knowledge before I went to New Orleans, because it was like going into Sodom and Gomorrah. I mean, it was going to the French Quarter, in the center of the French Quarter on Bourbon and Bienville Street. I really just kept thinking, God, really, this is where you really are going to put me right now, huh? And I felt like, well, yeah, where else would I put you? I felt that still small voice say, where else have I, trained you to be but on the front lines, and to be in the middle and be a light in a very dark place, and just do that. Be disciplined to do that. Be faithful to do that. And, I'm going to take care of the rest. I'm not going to put you somewhere where, I'm not going to be with you. I'm never going to leave you or forsake you. I can do all things through Christ. So all the scriptures just kept flooding back into my spirit when I decided to do this. This journey in New Orleans, and God has been faithful.
Rick, I had a call from Jamie, who lives across the river in Hudson, Wisconsin. Says if Rick traveled to Minneapolis, what are his favorite restaurants to eat at? So, and of course we have, we got stations in Madison and in Duluth and Fargo and Sioux Falls and Waterloo. So I don't know if you've got if there are any good restaurants outside of Chicago, maybe you're a little biased.
There's plenty. I just don't know that area.
But okay.
Maybe she could tell me. But if she wants to talk New York or LA, San Francisco, London, Paris, I can certainly have those conversations. But unfortunately, I've never really spent enough time there. Just maybe through book tours and passing through. But I've never really had the opportunity to spend time. So if she wants to invite me over for dinner and show me the lay of the land, we could talk about that.
Yeah, it might be. Yeah, we may need to set up a little, Upper Midwest tour again or something for just a chef tour.
I would love that. I love that.
Yeah, we got a few minutes left. We don't have time to get to all of it. I was just wondering if there's some maybe common mistakes that we tend to make when we're preparing a meal. Things that if you got one or two tips that you'd like to leave with us.
Yeah, I would love to. I think one of the big common things is, again, people buy, just because they won't know, they buy dried, they're so accustomed to using dried herbs or spices. I'm somebody that loves to go buy fresh spices at a spice market and only keep them, if you pull, open, everybody, I challenge everybody to open up your cabinet and you look for that nutmeg, that star anise, that coriander that's been in that cabinet for like 10 years. I love going and every year I clean out my cabinets, I clean out all of that, and toasting spices, getting them to release their oils. If you're going to use any kind of cumin or coriander or any of that, put it in a pan, toast it, get the oils to release, buy yourself a fresh grinder, grind your own pepper, don't buy ground pepper, buy fresh pepper, peppercorns, and grind them in a grinder. Those little things make huge differences. Buying fresh herbs and before you, putting them in water, buying cilantro and flat leaf parsley and basil and fresh, and putting a nice little damp towel over them, putting in their in your fridge, and just chop them up right before you're going to use them. You'll see how much brighter and vibrant the flavors are. Last quick tip is, I love citrus, and I love to bring acid into food. Fats and different, like fat and salt are key, but when you're squeezing a fresh lemon or lime over something to finish a dish, you'd be so surprised on how beautiful the brightness of a dish becomes. So don't be afraid to use citrus as a finishing ingredient at the end of making a pasta or a risotto, or people are going, well, use it over fish, of course, but over a fresh salad, just that great squeeze of citrus, it makes a world of difference.
What are you making for dinner tonight?
Reservations.
Okay, all right, sure. Yes, that's the old joke, right? Your wife tells you
right.
Her three favorite words: "Let's eat out." Right? Well, do you enjoy eating out, or do you always want to cook yourself when you have the opportunity?
No, I love eating out. It's my job, right? Okay. I mean, I love it. I love eating out. Love to go. I have 5 or 6 places in Chicago that are just like simple Italian, simple steakhouses, that it's great. It's great to be waited on and cooked for and bring your family and have time with your family over a meal.
So someone asked, when was the last time Rick ate fast food?
I gotta confess, it kind of bridges this, is it really fast food or not, but I'm an Italian beef junkie. I mean, if I have one vice, it's like Chicago Italian beef with like hot giardiniera. So like Al's beef, Portillo's beef, Mr. Beef, like the list goes on and on and on. I'm a once a week Italian beef guy. I got to get my Italian beef fix. So I guess if you would consider that fast food arena, but as far as the fast food chains, it's probably been, 10 years.
Well, we appreciate that you're a real chef and real foodie. We love it, and I always enjoy the opportunity to get together and chat with you. I wish you a good summer, and I want to just encourage our listeners to check out his book as well. Is there a website if we want to find out more about what you're doing and cooking?
Yeah, www.tramontocuisine.com.
tramontocuisine.com. We'll check it out. Rick, good to visit with you.
Yeah.
Blessings.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming on with us here on Connecting Faith.
Yeah, back at you. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Chef Rick Tramonto, checking out Tramonto Cuisine, cuisine.com. Find out more about his writings, his books. And if you missed part of today's show or want to pass it on to a friend, of course, we post all our interviews up after the show is over, so you can check it out on our website at myfaithradio.com and then go to the Connecting Faith show page.